It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Week 9 in the National Football League. Cannot believe that we will be in double digits week 10 next week. And before you know it, there will be no more buys. Before you know it, fantasy playoffs will be here. This is the Fantasy Feast Podcast. So nice we do it twice. He is the star of the show. I admit that. Evan Silva, who dedicates 18-hour days to fantasy football analysis for rotoworld.com and your benefit. You can and should go ahead and follow him on Twitter at Evan Silva. I am at Ross Tucker NFL, and we are presented by fanvice.com. If you haven't gone there yet, check it out. One-stop shop for all your daily fantasy sports needs. Make sure you follow them on Twitter at FanviceDFS and check out their articles, live streaming videos, everything over at fanvice.com. Again, a bunch of buys this week, Evan, so really looking forward to getting your thoughts on what tight ends to play, what quarterbacks to play, what defenses to play. Speaking of playing, if you guys haven't yet played over at BetDSI.com, why not? Go to BetDSI.com and take advantage of the code Tucker15. You get $15 free. If you get this in time, you can put it on Game 7 in the World Series. You can also put it on the election with Trump and Hillary. You can put it on the whatever you want, baseball, basketball, NHL, or, of course, our beloved NFL. At any rate, use the code Tucker15. That is the key. They say it takes a couple hours sometimes for that $15 to automatically generate, but you'll get it. You don't need to email. We got a couple people emailing recently. You'll get it. Just they run a script that automatically generates it. So you will get the free $15 if you use the code Tucker15 over at BetDSI.com. All right, Evan, as always, we will start with the Thursday nighter. It's the Falcons in Tampa to take on the Bucks, who just got torched by Derek Carr and the gang on Sunday. What are the big things that stand out to you in this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it looks like a high-scoring game. There's a big total. Both teams give up a lot of plays down the football field. The Bucks and Falcons each have given up 29 completions of 20-plus yards, which ranks fourth most in the NFL. Both teams have done that. And, I think we Matt Ryan has shown a really good week-to-week floor. He has not finished worse than the quarterback 16 on the week in any week this season. And he's also mixed in some big weeks as well. And, on paper, this looks like it should be a big week for him. Julio Jones was a disappointment last week. I think that it had more to do with the way that the Packers played him than this injury. I mean, it seems like he's always dealing with a nagging injury of some sort. But when you watch the game, I mean, the Packers put Ladarius Gunter on him in man coverage, and they would have a safety over the top and inside to kind of cut off the slant route. And then on a lot of obvious passing downs, and especially in the red zone, I mean, they just were not going to let Julio beat them. You know, Dom Capers was not going to let Julio beat them. But the good news is that other guys on the Falcons beat the Packers. I mean, Mohamed Sanu had a big game. Taylor Gabriel was making plays. Austin Hooper was a contributor after Tammy left early in the game. So I don't know, do the Bucks look at that last week and think, well, this is obviously the way to play the Falcons? I mean, it didn't work, So I'm still feeling pretty good about Julio. And I think that he should bounce back against a Buccaneers pass defense that, like you mentioned, just got torn up. And Vernon Hargreaves in particular got smoked repeatedly by Amari Cooper. Sanu has been up and down, and it kind of seems like his production is dependent on how opponents play Julio. With that said, it's a good matchup for Mohamed Sanu. There are six teams on bye. You know, I don't think he's a terrible fantasy play in a season-long league. Austin Hooper is pretty interesting in the Thursday night game because Tammy is not going to play due to the shoulder injury. Austin Hooper was up around 75% of the snaps last week. Austin Hooper, these rookie tight ends usually struggle, but the rookie tight ends have been good this year. Hunter Henry has been a playmaker and a matchup weapon for the Chargers, and Austin Hooper has caught all 11 of his targets on the season, is averaging almost 18 yards per reception, has shown big play ability. And if you need a streamer tight end, if you look at the teams that are on bye this week, Tyler Eifert's on a bye, Jordan Reed is on a bye, Rob Gronkowski's on a bye, Zach Miller of the Bears is on a bye. There are just a lot of guys. C.J. Fedorowicz has been good in fantasy, and he's on a bye. You know, people need streamer tight ends, and Austin Hooper is as good a bet as any this week. On the Buccaneers side, you know, Jameis has been up and down, but you're just not going to get many better matchups than the Falcons. They've allowed the most touchdown passes in football, tied with the Lions for most touchdown passes allowed. Jameis Winston, when these teams played, was the number five overall fantasy quarterback in week one. In that week one game, Desmond Trufant did not shadow Mike Evans. He actually ended up on Vincent Jackson for most of that game. And also last week, Desmond Trufant did not run around and chase Jordy Nelson. So I don't know that it's a guarantee. I mean, it would make sense to you and I probably to think that Desmond Trufant would chase Mike Evans, but it doesn't seem like a guarantee at this point. Mike Evans should have had it. Was very close to a much bigger game last week. Got dragged down on a deep bomb by DJ Hayden, an obvious holding penalty. I mean, he had two steps on Hayden for what would have been a long touchdown. You know, just kind of what happens. You know, how this stuff goes. Yeah, I mean, not really looking at any. Oh, I guess we got to talk about the backfield. Jacquizz Rodgers not going to play, so the three running backs that the Buccaneers have right now available are Antoine Smith, who last week played a lot of snaps. The number two guy is Peyton Barber, who looked really good against San Francisco in week seven, ripped off a 44-yard touchdown late in the game. Was really surprised that he did not have more involvement last week. But Dirk Koetter seems to really trust his guys. I mean, Jacquizz Rodgers was never a guy that you would think would be getting 30 touches in a game. But Dirk Koetter trusts him, and he was willing to do that with Jacquizz Rodgers. And Antoine Smith is Dirk Cutter's guy from Atlanta. So, and he's another small guy, but so was Jacquizz. And Peyton Barber's 5'10", 228. So when you look at the guys, you think, well, Peyton Barber looks like the feature back, but I think that Dirk Koetter is just going to go with the guys that he trusts. And I think that Antoine Smith leads this backfield in playing time and touches. And if you want an RB to use this week, if you're struggling at running back, of course there have been a lot of injuries at running back. That's always the case. Antoine Smith, I think, would be your best bet. Should mention Cameron Brate leads the Buccaneers in red zone targets and targets inside the 5-yard line. His playing time is down, only played about 60% of the Bucs snaps last week, but they use him in scoring position. And he caught a 5-yard TD last week. You know, probably not going to be a guy who gets you five or six catches, but if you need a tight end that gives you a shot at a TD, Cameron Brate would be your guy. I think I would go with Austin Hooper if forced to choose between those two this week.
Pittsburgh's at Baltimore, Evan. As of when we recorded this today on Wednesday, it is 11 a.m. Eastern time. We don't know whether or not Big Ben's going to play. I would suspect that he will. I am a Big Ben owner in the Fantasy Feast League, so my other quarterback's Carson Wentz. So you got to tell me if, as long as Ben's active, I'm playing him, and also how you're playing it if you've got, you know, these other guys, Jesse James or Lev Bell or Antonio Brown or whoever, depending on whether Landry Jones plays or Ben.
Yeah, I think Ben plays, so we can just approach it that way. These divisional games in the middle of the season kind of have a tendency to be lower scoring. I don't think that this sets up as a monster game for Ben. His monster games have usually come at home and not when he's been coming off an extended a multi-week layoff. He has normally struggled in those kinds of games. I remember last year, a lot of people wanted to play him in daily fantasy in a game against Cincinnati, which was another division game, and he had missed time heading into that game, and he was just a total flop in that game. I mean, and that's just one example, but probably not, you know, a guy that I'll definitely start him in a season-long league, but I think I'm going to give him a week before using him in daily fantasy. He has, like, even bigger home road splits than Drew Brees over the past 2 years. I mean, it's incredible how much better he has been at home. And, I mean, the Ravens are healthy coming off their bye, and they haven't been they've been a below average matchup for opposing passing games so far this year. So not really looking at Ben in DFS this week. Antonio Brown, though, I mean, always got to look at him. The Ravens have, when Jimmy Smith has been in the lineup, they have been strong against opposing number one receivers, but still willing to gamble on Antonio Brown pretty much against anyone. Lev Bell, I think, is almost a must play in daily fantasy this week. I mean, we'll see if we get any value running backs. Last week we got Devontae Booker, and he pretty much paid off. But I would pencil in Le'Veon Bell right now, and Ezekiel Elliott. Those guys are going to be expensive, but I mean, they're both awesome plays. And then the rest of the receiver core, Sammy Coates should be healthy. He's been super boom or bust, and that's just the kind of player that he is. So expecting consistency from him is probably not what we should do. But at the same time, he's going to have an awesome matchup. I think that he should get matched up a lot with Sharice Wright, and Sharice Wright has gotten burned as much as any corner in the league this year. I mean, I remember Michael Crabtree torching him, Corey Coleman torching him. So this looks like an upside week for Sammy Coates. And then the Ravens shut down tight end, so I'm not really looking at Jesse James this week.
What about on the Ravens side?
Joe Flacco has just been really bad, really bad. Not good in fantasy for a long time. I mean, he wasn't good in fantasy last year either when he was healthy, even though he's had a lot of attempts. The Ravens fired Mark Trestman, but in two games under for play selection, I believe, but in two games under Marty Morningweg, they haven't been a whole lot more committed to the run. And during their bye, John Harbaugh said that he wanted to see Kenneth Dixon more involved. So this running back situation is really difficult to trust. And plus now they're facing a Steelers defense that really struggled against the run before their bye, but is now getting back. Cameron Hayward and Ryan Shazier should be healthy. So I don't know the workload distribution for the Ravens running backs, and I don't think that this is a great matchup for their running game at all. So that makes that backfield pretty tricky to navigate. We don't know about Steve Smith yet. He clearly had a high ankle sprain, missed multiple games. We'll find out more about him. Mike Wallace has been the most consistent receiver on the Ravens. And even when Steve Smith has been in there, Mike Wallace has been pretty productive. So I think that Mike Wallace makes sense as a third receiver play in fantasy, who is arguably a second receiver in fantasy if Steve Smith can't go. And then Dennis Pitta has been pretty reliable in terms of his catch totals, has not scored a touchdown since December of 2013. So, you know, not a great bet for a TD at this point, but if you need catches in a PPR league, I mean, you could do a lot worse than Dennis Pitta.
Let's move on. Dallas is in Cleveland. I guess the Browns, as of right now, are listing Cody Kessler and Josh McCown as co-starters for this one. McCown kind of got the Browns going, at least in the first half last week against the Jets. They ended up with 28 points, which isn't too shabby.
Yeah. I mean, I hope we get another week of McCown. I would like to see him in there with Corey Coleman. It looks like Corey Coleman's going to be back. And Terrell Pryor and Gary Barnage. I mean, they have some firepower on offense. Duke Johnson has been getting a lot of targets and catches with McCown in there this season. That was the case as well last year. Gary Barnage, I mentioned on the show last week that Travis Kelce was my favorite daily fantasy tight end play last week, and he just went nuts. But by the end of the week, I had talked myself off of Travis Kelce and onto Gary Barnage, who had he scored a touchdown late in the game, but he only got 1 foot in, and he drew a defensive pass interference penalty in the end zone, and Isaiah Crowell scored from 1 yard out on the next play. I thought it was going to be a big game for Gary Barnage when he came out. He had a 32-yard catch on the first play. But yeah, we brush it off and move on to the next week. Terrell Pryor has been awesome, especially with Morris Claiborne out. Nothing really to fear in the Dallas secondary. Dallas also going to be without Barry Church. He's been a really good player for them at safety. So the matchup looks good. It's just, you know, it looks like the Cowboys should be able to impose their will in this game and really dominate the clock and play keep away against a Browns run defense that has really started to play pretty well early in the season, but we knew that probably wasn't going to last and has not been great. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott looks like the best running back play. David Johnson's on bye, and Le'Veon is against the Ravens. Ezekiel Elliott looks like the best running back play on the board in Week 9. Dez got rolling. That was awesome to see. And he's a great play against the Browns, who have given up monster receiving lines to opposing receivers all season long. And then Dak. I mean, Dak has been good in fantasy. He rushes for touchdowns. He's got Dez back now as a playmaker in the passing game. You know, it's just a game where the Cowboys should have the ball a lot and be in scoring position frequently, and that is good for fantasy production.
I like it. Jacksonville is in Kansas City, and this is important to note, Evan, Blake Bortles flew in his private quarterback guru this week. So I just want you to adjust all of your rankings projections accordingly.
He also scored 35 fantasy points last week in garbage time.
Is that not unbelievable? Is that not, you know, I saw your boy Summerlin say he doesn't like it when bad players score a lot of fantasy points like Melvin Gordon. What does he think about when a guy, like when Bortles? I mean, what does he think about that?
It's the worst of the worst. And then, of course, you know, Allen Robinson doesn't even have a big day. Allen Robinson gets 15 targets, 6 catches for 70. I don't even know what to say about the Jaguars' offense right now. We know that Allen Robinson is talented, but he has played horribly this year. I mean, he leads the NFL in drops. His quarterback is a train wreck who can't move the ball until the opponent is playing prevent defense. Allen Hurns is a good player. I mean, he's probably been the Jaguars' best player on offense this season. But, I mean, he's been up and down too. He does have a good matchup against Steven Nelson in the slot. The Chiefs' slot corner, Steven Nelson, has not been very good this year. Allen Robinson runs most of his routes against opposing right corners, which has been the weakness for Kansas City this year because Marcus Peters plays only left cornerback and never moves. So the matchup is good for Allen Robinson, and his price is way down in daily fantasy, which makes him pretty tempting because he's still seeing so many targets and he gets a ton of action in scoring position. But he's also been a guy who has just let us down so many times in really good spots. I mean, against the Raiders, the Bears, you know, you name it, Allen Robinson has pretty much failed this season. Julius Thomas has been, you know, a reasonable bet for a touchdown, but not getting a lot of targets, not getting a lot of yards, and the Chiefs eliminate tight ends. I mean, really, this game sets up well on paper for Allen Robinson. You're going to have Eric Berry against Julius Thomas. You know, you got Marcus Peters on the other side of the formation, and the game should set up well for Allen Robinson, especially with his price down in daily fantasy. He's tempting, man. He's tempting. The running backs are essentially hands off. I mean, I don't know how you could trust TJ Yeldon or Chris Ivory at this point. The new OC, Nathaniel Hackett, fantasy people will remember him fondly or not so much as the guy who promised that the Bills would run CJ Spiller until he threw up. And then they use C.J. Spiller as a change of pace back for Fred Jackson. he has sort of a run-heavy history, but I don't know what that means. I mean, it's a situation where we're going to have to see it for one game and then maybe kind of adjust our expectations, but I don't know what the OC change means here, and I'm hoping that you can provide some insight when we get to the Vikings Lions game regarding Norv Turner. For KC, the Chiefs at this point are saying that Alex Smith doesn't have a concussion, and so I would fully expect him to start. He is an okay, not great streamer. If you need quarterback help this week, the Jaguars have been above average in pass defense this year, although Marcus Mariota, at least in the first half, pretty much did whatever he wanted against them in their last game. Spencer Ware, you know, this is a situation where we're not going to know what the deal will be until Friday, most likely. And then if there is no Spencer Ware, then I would expect Charkandrick West to be maybe the highest owned running back in daily fantasy this week, regardless of the site that you're playing on. The Jaguars have been pretty weak against the run, and Charkandrick West is a guy that the Chiefs, when they have been forced to, have shown that they're willing to ride pretty hard. Jamal Charles went on IR. You can obviously drop him. And Spencer Ware, of course, suffered the concussion, and he's going to be questionable at best. Their other back is Bishop Sankey, who was signed off of, I believe, the Patriots practice squad this week. Jeremy Maclin finally got in the paint last week. That was good to see. But he's still like on the wide receiver three fringe as a fantasy play. And Travis Kelce is just an every week starter and season long. Don't love the matchup for him in from a DFS standpoint. The Jaguars have been good against tight ends, but then of course, you know, last game they gave up almost 100 yards to Delanie Walker and Philip Supernaw. So yeah, I mean, that's what I got on this game.
Got it. I like it. How about the Jets and the Dolphins? Let's start with the Dolphins offensively. Coming off the bye, boy, they had 2 weeks in a row with Jay Ajayi and the O-line just getting after it. What does that mean for them in their matchup with the Jets?
So we saw Jay Ajayi produce in what on paper looked like a really bad matchup against the Bills, who in all of their other games, including last week against New England, have shut down the run. But they got torched on the ground by Jay Ajayi. That's a good sign, I would think, for the Dolphins running game. Like you mentioned, their O-line is now healthy. I mean, Brandon Albert and Mike Pouncey in particular battled injuries early in the season. I mean, these guys should be rolling now, right? I mean, you think that offensive line continuity is pretty important, right?
Yes, I do. And they're playing well, and they're playing with confidence, and Gase isn't afraid to just keep pounding it. And I hope they get off to a good start, because I want to make him stay in that mode. Sometimes these guys, it's like, okay, the first four or five carries don't go that well. We can't run on these guys today.
Right.
And they just kind of abandon it. Whereas the good coordinators and the good team, they just keep, like, watch Dallas. Like, they'll just keep doing it. They don't care because they know that it's going to work. It's going to eventually break through.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a bad matchup on paper. It's another bad matchup on paper. The Jets have one of the best run defenses in football, but you have a lot of things working in the favor of Jay Ajayi right now. Workload, is the number one thing. He's got 26 and 28 touches in his last two games. Arian Foster's retirement further solidifies his usage, and those are things that you can feel comfortable about with Jay Ajayi. At the same time, you know, there certainly is a possibility that the Jets slow down or shut down the Dolphins running game, because that's what the Jets do. That's the strength of the Jets. And if that plays out, then Jarvis Landry becomes the running game for the Dolphins, and he would be in position to see a lot of targets. I mean, he probably is anyway. I mean, this is a guy who has at least six catches in all but one game this season. Jarvis Landry is one of the highest floor plays on the board, and I like his matchup. I mean, the Browns gave up two touchdowns to Andrew Hawkins, the Browns slot receiver, last week. Buster Screen has been missing time with an injury. He's the Jet slot corner. And then it's also a spot for, I mean, Devontae Parker has been very boom or bust this season, and mostly bust. But it's a good spot for him on paper, because the Jets struggle with speed receivers. And Devontae Parker can get deep. And the Jets have, in terms of pass rush, they have severely disappointed this year. I mean, they have, I think, six or seven sacks over their last seven games, and have been, like, in terms of pass rush efficiency, have been one of the worst teams in football. So it's a good spot, I think, for the Dolphins offense really as a whole. They should be able to move the ball here. Brandon Marshall has been disappointing, but he's still getting a ton of targets. He is second in the NFL in red zone targets. He destroyed the Dolphins in both of their games last year. It's kind of like a revenge game for him. You know, the Dolphins, remember traded him away. Has been a little bit disappointing recently, but I think that he gets back on track against Tony Lippett and Byron Maxwell. Fitzpatrick, I think, is not really – like, I would rather play Ryan Tannehill this week than Ryan Fitzpatrick if forced to choose between the two. Forte is rolling again. You know, the Jets have had success offensively this year when they have rode Matt Forte hard as the feature back. I mean, those have all been their best games. They rode him hard against the Bengals, should have won that game, rode him hard against the Bills, won that game, and have rode him hard the last 2 weeks and have played pretty well. And I think that they will ride him hard again against Miami in a good matchup for the running game. Quincy Anunua has come on. He has come on again. It's funny how these guys just kind of like go away and then they come back. I mean, Quincy Anunua has come back to us, and he's seeing a lot of volume. He is playing better than any other pass catcher on the Jets. And I would expect him to be productive once again against Miami.
Okay, cool. I like it. What about Detroit at Minnesota? I think what stood out to me watching Detroit up close and personal on Sunday, Evan, was, boy, their receivers, especially Anquan Boldin, Golden Tate, really struggle to create any separation. And even Marvin Jones did a couple of times, but it wasn't much. It was not real impressive. He and Stafford not on the same page. They almost exclusively were just going with the matchups of Riddick and Ebron against linebackers, safeties, etc. So that's something to keep in mind, especially with Minnesota having some pretty good corners like Xavier Rhodes. And then what also is interesting is on the defensive side of the ball, the Lions got, well, first of all, their linebackers could not cover the tight ends for the Texans to save their life.
Yeah.
It was 10 for 94 yards and a touchdown just in the first half. So that wasn't working for them. And then the end of the game, they couldn't stop the run. I mean, the Texans went two straight drives where they didn't even throw the ball, and they were able to just run the ball down the field for a score and then run the clock out. So a lot of bad from the Lions defensively, which means it's a good game for North Turner to leave, I guess, if you're Pat Shurmur, and get your first chance as an offensive coordinator. I would expect them to feel like this should be a big game for Kyle Rudolph, and that if they can't run it on Detroit, that maybe they can't run it on anybody based on what the Texans did, especially late in that game.
Yeah, yeah. What the heck is going on with the Vikings? Can you? I mean, they did not show up at all on Monday night. Is this just a situation where they just, you know, snap and bounce back?
No, I don't think so, because they didn't bounce back after the loss to Philly, like I thought they would. They're not a bounce, like snap and bounce back. I expect them to play better, primarily because they can't play worse, and they're playing at home. But no, I don't think. I mean, I think they would have snapped their fingers last week if they could have.
Yeah, man, I can't believe that they got dominated by the Bears. That is the most shocking result that I've seen this season, I think. They got out-coached by the Bears. The Vikings got out-coached by the Bears and outplayed in every phase, which was just incredible. I guess that this is what makes this stuff fun. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much with you on all this analysis. I, you know, Jerick McKinnon, did not practice at all last week, was in a walking boot. Now they're on a short week. I don't think that we will see him. I mean, we'll see. But just based on what we know on Wednesday morning, I wouldn't bet on seeing him. Stephon Diggs, whenever he has not been on the injury report with a groin injury, has just destroyed every single week. He's been healthy for and off the injury report for 3 weeks, weeks 1, 2, and 8, and he has been awesome in fantasy in all three of those games. And then he's played in 3 games where he's been listed on the injury report with a groin injury, and he has done very, very little in those three. And plus, the Lions are going to be without Darius Slay. So it's a good spot for Stephon Diggs as well. I'm with you on Kyle Rudolph. I think he's probably a top three tight end play this week, right up there with Greg Olsen. We mentioned how that there are a lot of stud tight ends on bye. I would expect Asiata to get a lot of work again. He was disappointing in what looked like a great matchup and, you know, every reason to expect him to be productive. But he, I don't know where he finished with like 70 total yards or something. He got stuffed twice on the goal line. You know, seeing that stuff is always frustrating. But I mean, he got 16 touches. Ronnie Hillman only got 6, and Asiata played 70% of the snaps. And now they're going back home where, like you mentioned, I mean, they can't play worse and they're facing another bad defense. So, I mean, if you need running back help, I mean, Matt Asiata is going to get you work and a decent bet at a touchdown. It's going to be tough for the Lions, you would think. You would think that it would be tough for the Lions because of the Vikings' cornerback play. I couldn't believe that against a Bears offense that was missing both of its starting guards and is not very good at tackle, the Vikings really did not get any pressure on the Bears.
Yeah.
I mean, they were really smart to get Cutler rolling out a lot. I mean, they simply outcoached the Vikings, I think.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that, among other things in that game.
Among other things, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we can move on to the Eagles and the Giants. Giants coming off a bye. Eagles sort of a death by a thousand paper cuts Sunday night against the Cowboys, throwing it underneath quite a bit and using the heck out of Darren Sproles on Sunday night.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we will see a lot of Darren Sproles again. I mean, he has been their most effective back this season. The issue with him in fantasy was that he was just not getting a lot of work. But he got a lot of work in their last game, and it looks like he's going to get a lot of work again. I mean, the Giants don't have a lot of athleticism on the second level, and I think that the Eagles should be able to exploit that with Darren Sproles. You know, his touchdown probability is not great because he'll get them down to like the 5, and then they'll put in Ryan Matthews. But, you know, I think that Darren Sproles is a good fantasy play this week, and he's super cheap in DFS, and I think that he will be popular, especially on DraftKings, and even on FanDuel. I mean, he's right near the minimum. And I don't think he's a bad play, you know, assuming that he gets work similar to last week. And at this point, I think that he will. Jordan Matthews pops back up for a huge target game. And the Giants have been really bad against slot receivers all season long. So the matchup is good. Jordan Matthews usually has good matchups. It's just a matter of, you know, will he get the ball a lot? You know, will he get a lot of opportunities? And will he make the most of them? I mean, he's been a tease so far through this is third NFL season. He has been a tease, but the matchup is good, and it was promising to see him get a lot of work last week. And then, I mean, we have no expectations at this point for the Eagles perimeter wide receivers. For the Giants, you know, There is talk of Paul Perkins, the rookie back, getting more action. But I think that it's probably still going to be a three-man committee with Rashad Jennings and Bobby Rainey and some Paul Perkins. And the Giants just don't run it well, period. And I don't think that they're going to be able to run it very well against the Eagles. Maybe you're stashing Paul Perkins, but I just don't really have expectations for any Giants RBs this week, and probably not going forward either, unless they really commit to Paul Perkins as a 20 touch guy. But I don't know that that is very likely. Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz really have done nothing since the first couple of games of the season. Victor Cruz lost snaps in the Giants' last game. I think it's OBJ and nothing really else. I would be worried about Eli Manning again in this game. I know the Giants are coming off the bye. Maybe they get them some things figured out. But Eli Manning has been awful against pressure this year, and the Eagles can bring a lot of pressure, and I would expect them to be able to bring a lot of pressure against the Giants O-line. So don't love the idea of starting Eli in fantasy this week.
That'll do it for part one, the Thursday Nighter, and all of the 1 o'clock Eastern Time games. Part two, which will be posted just after midnight, we'll include all the late games as well as the Sunday and Monday nighters. Remember this, though. DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy football. No season-long commitments to busts and bench warmers. You got a guy that's getting injured. You had Jamal Charles. I get it. Injuries happen. They stink. I have Big Ben. Cost me a week probably. That's okay. I can live with it. And you can live with it always at DraftKings.com, because every week's a brand new season. That's what's so cool about it. You can renew old rivalries with friends and play them every week. Or you can try 50-50 contests where the top half of all entries win cash. Look, even if your current fantasy team is circling the drain, or if you're doing awesome, either way, you can and should win huge cash prizes at DraftKings. Don't wait. Start your new season at DraftKings.com now. Use the code FEAST and play for free with your first deposit. That's code FEAST to play free for your share of over $1 million in total prizes this weekend, only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply, so see the website for details. And that'll do it for part one. I'm stuffed. I'm full. Make sure you download tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
I did it. I finally did it. I got a new car. I've been talking to you guys about it for a while. I got a new car. I needed one. My other one died. I got a new Denali, and I used TrueCar, because why wouldn't I? I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for months now, and it's just a better experience. I mean, you're able to lock in the savings with a dealer on the website. They've got a huge certified dealer network. So if you're not sure how it works, you just go to the TrueCar website or you use the TrueCar app, and they've got this bell curve. It's a pricing curve that shows you exactly what that vehicle you want is going for in your local market. And then you can actually online connect with a TrueCar local certified dealer of your choosing, and you lock in the savings off the MSRP. You just go in, you hand them the certificate that you printed out off your computer, and boom, you're good to go. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.